Welcome back, everybody. This is Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. I'm Brian. There's no Luke. He'll be back tomorrow. He's got a well-deserved day off, and a lot of you do, too. Happy MLK Day. You're listening to us on WTTN 1580 AM, 92.7 FM, Devil Radio, 92.7. Also in Waukesha at 540 AM and 101 FM, The Shaw. Always streaming on the Devil Radio app. You can give me a call anytime or text 844-967-2789. We've got a couple callers here. We'll go to that right now. We got Ross in Middleton. How are you, Ross in Middleton?
Hey, Brian. Thanks for bringing up, obviously, a timely subject. I mean, it is Martin Luther King Day. And I'm an older guy, 60 years old. Well, 62, sorry. And no kids. And so the critical race theory and what they teach young kids, the one thought that I have is that maybe that might be too much. That may be a heavy burden, and I don't know if it would even be productive or fruitful for such young kids, but that's just a thought. Sort of getting more with the actual holiday or the remembrance is, you know, sometimes I'll be listening to the radio or it might be television, and they'll be showing a speech of Martin Luther King, and you listen to it, and each time you listen to it, you get something else out of it. It sort of has meaning. But there's also this sort of receding historical sort of feeling that you get about this speech, like, okay, yeah, this applied to stuff in the 60s. What does it mean today? And I think about the protest that happened after George Floyd was murdered, and there was there were these marches and protests, and some of it had the appearance of being a little bit of anarchy and kind of getting thrown out of control. But I sometimes think at the heart of it, how does one, and this is what I would think that the Martin Luther King holiday might teach us, is how do we respond to the craziness of the world, especially if we're black and we're sort of always having somebody's boot on our neck, respond in such a way that's meaningful and at the same time keeping it peaceful. So some people would sort of say the Black Lives Matter thing was out of control and Antifa took over and it was just violent and it was, just, you know, and they sort of compare it to the insurrection, like, well
that's,
you know,
that's again storytelling, yeah, and narrative spinning it out of control. Could you imagine today's media covering the protest back then? Could you imagine, especially with, because, I mean, back then you actually had people in media, not just, you know, passively, you know, skipping over resumes type of racism, but like, I can just be out there saying stupid things, like, as bad as Anchorman is a parody, they were saying stupid things like that out loud going, this is how people think. And that was accepted. Could you imagine today's media, like the power of today's media being covering Martin Luther King back then? That is just, it would be,
right,
insane.
You know,
could you imagine TMZ walking around trying to find it all, you know, uncovering everything about MLK? My goodness.
And it is, and it's sort of, and you almost sort of wonder, like, what do protests mean? I mean, when you look at Martin Luther King hanging out at the Lincoln Memorial, and there's, I don't know how many, there's tens and 20s and 30s of thousands of people just spread out of the mall, and you think, wow, this was an event, and there may have only been three TV stations, and so, you know, you didn't have a million choices, and so people are looking at this going, and this is meaningful, and then, you know, with flashes of the riots, with, not the riots, but like where black people riding might have dogs and stuff stick on them, and it would have had a lot of meaning. Now I sort of think, like, we have these marches, these protests, and I don't know if it has any meaning anymore. It may for the people, but
I know a lot of the folks that have done that, and I know that Rep. Jonathan Prostoff and several leaders of the – I say him because I see it through a lot of his eyes, a lot of his posts. People marched every day for almost a year, if not more. Ryan Clancy as well joined everybody in marching. They marched in Tulsa. They marched everywhere. And by and large, those are the people who were turning in the people who were you know, the bad actors and things like that. And I understand what you're saying. Like, there's a different feel to things. But I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, Martin Luther King's loss of patience. You know, and thank you very much, Russ. I really appreciate your call, and please keep continuing to do so. Martin Luther King was I'm going back to Reggie Jackson's article here. He lost patience. All right. Well, here's a quote. We have no alternative but to protest. For many years, we have shown an amazing patience. We have sometimes given our white brothers the feeling that we like the way we were being treated. But we come here tonight to be saved from that patience that makes us patient with anything less than the freedom and justice. The theme of a lack of patience will be a common motif by Dr. King for the next dozen years of his life. Could you imagine the impatience at this point? So you see the agitation in a lot of people's protesting. A lot of people are like, are you kidding me? We have to get out here and do this now? That's where a lot of the impatience comes from. And I totally understand there's a different feel to it. And you were trying to talk about things like, you know, having that great giant group of people out there and having a great orator come out and give hope and maybe give a little bit of change in there. And the only thing that popped into my head was the inauguration of Barack Obama in Grant Park. Millions of people out there, and they probably trashed the place, but I don't think that they were there with any sort of malice in their head. And yes, you can talk complete cynicism with that in the ensuing years after that and what happened and how things went down. And I'm not necessarily saying Barack Obama and Martin Luther King are the same. Please don't equate that. I'm just trying to think of the last time a whole bunch of people came together like that in that type of way to talk about it. It's an interesting thing, but I think this man is important enough that we need to learn about him. Do we not? Let's go to Mark from the SEC. What do you have to say? How you doing, Mark?
Hey, yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
And I appreciate, you know, what Ross has said, you know, that critical race theory, but they're not teaching critical race theory to kids in school.
Not the specific critical race theory that they're actually specifically talking about. Yes, no.
Not the way it's portrayed. But there's a book that I don't have the title with me right at the moment, but it was I picked it up at St. Vinny's, and called the Slave Trade. It was a documentary, thumbnail sketch of the slave trade, the Atlantic slave trade, how it went across, you know, from Africa to North and South America. But there's another title that comes up that far more terrible for women, talk personal accounts of women in slavery. You know, real history, you know, real voices of women that spoke of this, you know, because some of this stuff was recorded. And at what age should we be talking to kids about this? And fifth grade, you know, that, and I was somewhat aware of it because my dad had all these war books, you know, World War II books at home, but a fifth grade teacher talking to us about the Nazi Holocaust. Is that something we, you know, that some of these people think we should be exposed to? What level should we be exposed to learning about that? How do you at what age is appropriate to teach? Well, I thought it was appropriate because it, you know, awoken my mind even further to what had gone on and my abhorrence of Nazism. And now I hear you kind of soften the whole thing about what Nazism was about, what fascism was about, what the slave mm-hmm. trade was about, what slavery was about. And you're right, the lack of patience there is that some of the progress we have made since the 1960s, but the lack of progress we have made since the 1960s, when four or five police officers think they can get away with kneeling on a guy's neck until he dies and think there's a defense to that. I mean, you know, we don't see big incidences of police, you know, sicking their dogs on crowds of black folks, mm-hmm. but it's still going on. I mean that, and for the violence that occurred during the George Floyd protests, a lot of that violence was instigated by white provocateurs. By provocateurs, they went into it to try to get something going, and the incidences of violence pale in comparison to some of the violence that's gone on in the past with some of these white, you know, that like in Charlottesville, where a guy drove his car through a line and killed a woman protester. Where in Florida, you can actually pass a law where you can drive your car into protesters because, oh, I felt threatened by these protesters. So we've made some progress, but this backsliding that has happened, you know, and the politicians that are profiting off this backsliding, like Ron DeSantis in Florida, Donald Trump, the president of the United States, is still trying to profit off of doing these racist motifs and spewing this nonsense.
What is even dumber, I think, and thank you for the call, is I think a lot of it is not necessarily that they totally believe what they're saying as much as people get excited and donate money when they say those things. And that's kind of how, you know, our media is here right now. That's how it is. Are you trying to sell something? Because you can't necessarily continue on your operations if you don't have money coming through. Money comes through with listeners, and you get more listeners by saying crazy stuff. I try and stay away from the crazy stuff. I let myself be the crazy person here, and then that kind of works out. At least it seems to be working for me. CJ, how you doing, man? Welcome to the show. What do you got for me?
Hey, Ryan. I happen to, first off, happy Martin Luther King Day.
Thank you. You as well.
Fox, thank you. Fox actually had a cool show this morning. A lot of black African-American people on who have achieved great things in this beautiful country we have. And our president currently ran on uniting us. And I don't know, Ryan, do you feel like we're more divided than ever? And he's done nothing to help that situation?
Well, here's the thing. Helping to do something about it and solving the problem are two separate things. At least I'm not necessarily saying that the things that he's doing are the most wonderful things and we're all going to have hope and rainbows because of it, okay? You're not going to catch me with a, you know, Joe Biden t-shirt. I'm not that kind of guy. You know, he wasn't my first choice. But again, I appreciate that he's at least trying to go and say, come on, can we at least do something for the people here? You may not agree how to do it, but can we at least get this done? You know, and again, I don't necessarily know that it's going to be, it can't necessarily be one person that does all this stuff. You can make, it's easier to go and pour gasoline on the fire to make it worse than it is to go and heal it for sure. I think we can agree on that.
That's exactly what he did in Georgia. He created division where it didn't and wasn't necessary. There's actually
what specifically did he do in Georgia that was so divisional?
How about comparing anybody who didn't agree with him as being Jefferson Davis, Bull Connor? It's just and those were Democrats. So, you know, he's done nothing to cure this country. We actually elected our first mulatto president twice. And Martin Luther King,
we're running to a break right now, and that's really the only reason why we're doing this right now. But the nomenclature's getting a little out there, man. It's totally cool. I know you're not necessarily trying to be that way. I get it. And thank you for your call. Appreciate it, CJ. Please continue to call. We're getting more civil. I like that. I think that's the most important thing we get back and forth. Look, man, Joe Biden's no magical orator. It's like asking, you know, he reminds me of another version of Tony Evers as well. I think his heart's in the right place, at least. I think he's trying to make things work. I think he's trying to do the right thing, and I think he's getting pushed into the way to do the right thing as well. And I don't think he's trying to not do the right thing. For me, it's that I know that at least in his heart, he's going to go and try and do the right thing and not try and profit from it. That's kind of what my issue is with me and the other guy and that other stuff and the whole egotistic type of thing. But I could go down a rabbit hole for a little bit. I got 10 seconds left. Give me a call, 844-967-2789. I got some news to get to, and we'll take your calls. 844-967-2789.